ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। The demigods continue, do not fear criticism for being younger than us. Such etiquette does not apply in regard to Vedic mantras. Except in relationship to Vedic mantras, seniority is determined by age. But one may offer respectful obeisances even to a younger person who is advanced in chanting Vedic mantras. Therefore, although you are junior in relationship to us, you may become our priest without hesitation. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 7, entitled Indra Offends Brihaspati, Text 31 through 33. As we heard yesterday from Trey Prabhu, the importance of showing proper respect to every living entity according to their particular relationship with us. Lord Chaitanya told to Sri Sanatana Goswami that the observation of Vaishnav etiquette is the ornament that makes a devotee attractive to Krishna. And the basic principle of etiquette is how to respect others according to our relationship. Lord Chaitanya prayed, Naham vipro na cha narapatir na pibi na shut. Abhaisho na shudra, na ham varani na chagriha patir, na yato patir va. Kintu prodya nikila paramananda punamritad bheha gopi bharatur padakamalayora das das anudas. He's declaring himself not as a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, not as a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, but as the servant of the servant of the servant of Lord Krishna. So spiritual consciousness on the path of bhakti means to understand our position as servant in all circumstances, in all relationships. But according to the relationship, we must understand the proper method by which we can serve. Amanina manadena, and that entails offering respect. Because every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. And the Paramatma is within everyone's heart. Seeing this as the essence of all life, wherever it may be, a devotee offers proper respect. Srila Prabhupada explains in the previous verse that the demigods are approaching Vishwarup as their spiritual master. And Prabhupada says, one must approach a particular type of guru to execute a particular type of duty. In this case, the demigods were not seeking self-realization. They were seeking the return of their wealth, their residences, and their positions. It's very interesting. They lost everything simply because they disrespected their guru. And now they're trying to get everything back through the process of respecting a guru. It's very important. Due to disrespect, they lost everything. It's the power of Vaishnava etiquette. If you offend someone, Krishna withdraws his mercy. If you offer proper, and at the same time, the demons, they were very nicely respecting their guru, Shukracharya. They were serving him, worshiping him, honoring him, and therefore they gained great power by doing that. And they knew the demigods simply by neglect. They didn't say anything against Brihaspati. They didn't do anything against Brihaspati. They just neglected to show him respect. And because of that offense, Brihaspati left. He knew what would happen. He knows the science. And Indra realized after he made that mistake, it was only for a few seconds, what have I done? I neglected to receive and offer respect to a senior person. Everything's finished. I have to atone for this offense. So he was searching everywhere for Brihaspati, but Brihaspati hid because he didn't want Indra to get off that easy. Because if you get off too easy, you don't learn the lesson. So he had to learn a very hard lesson, and he had to atone for his offense. So yes, the demons, they saw, they disrespected a senior man, their guru. Now let's us respect and honor our guru. So Indra lost all his power. The demons gained all power. They attacked, and they just utterly defeated the demigods. They were just crushing their heads and their limbs and their bodies, and the demigods were running away in fear. And in great pain and anguish, they approached Brahma and said, save us. And Brahma said, you are fools. You disrespected your guru. What do you expect? Hare Krishna. Now, we here in the country of America, especially in these generations as they pass on, the idea of respect is not really considered so important. In fact, it's very fashionable to be disrespectful. People actually compete to become very disrespectful. It shows a certain type of power, a certain type of strength, a certain type of free will and independence to criticize others, to find faults in others, to disrespect others. But the laws of nature remain the same, whatever fashions our civilizations may adopt. And that law of nature is, if you disrespect a senior personality, you have to suffer. Even in traditional families in India, even grown men and women with children, when they see their parents, they immediately touch their feet. Hare Krishna. Because it's proper. They're a parent. They're to be respected. What to speak of a sadhu? What to speak of a guru? So yes, showing respect is basic foundational principle of civilization. But how to respect, that is a great science. So Lord Brahma tells the demigods that Brihaspati's gone and he's not going to reveal himself to you again for some time because he wants you to learn a good lesson. Now you've lost everything. You should go to Vishwarup. Honor him, respect him, worship him nicely, and by the strength of his chanting of mantras, he will give you the power to defeat the demons. Now, Vishwarup was the nephew of these demigods, son of Tvashta. And in this way, a nephew is like a son. So, socially, it's kind of awkward for the demigods to be offering obeisances to someone who is like their son and asking him to be their guru, not for spiritual realization, but for the necessity of the time. And here they're explaining that actually they're seeking his blessings. They're instructing him as their seniors in such a way that they're seeking his blessings that they can take an inferior position to him. We're senior, so we're instructing you that you should give your blessings so that we can be your inferiors. Because that's the only way it's going to work. Unless we respect you, honor you as our superior, we cannot receive your mercy. And Srila Prabhupada explains so nicely that in regards to spiritual life, material considerations are not to be taken so seriously. Srila Prabhupada explains, as far as Vaishnav etiquette is gone, a Vaishnav does respect people who are senior in age. Just like there's a beautiful letter of Srila Prabhupada to one of his godbrothers who was older than him. And Prabhupada very much humbles himself with obeisances as respect because he was senior in age. That is a sacred principle. We should respect people who are older than us. But we also especially respect someone who has deeper spiritual realization and higher knowledge. Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna, came in the role of a devotee to teach us how to be devotees. He acted like a devotee to teach us the process. And he established this principle very strong. Because in the age of Kali, people become very superficial and externally oriented. Marriage, according to one of the symptoms of Kali, is marriage takes place due to the attraction of the beauty between one and another. People are considered beautiful if they have long hair. So many external things, bodily conceptions. People consider one according to their particular designations. People are black, people are white, people are yellow, people are red. Men, women. Somebody's inferior because they're a woman. Someone's inferior because of their race. Someone's inferior because of their religion. Someone's inferior because of their nationality. This is all mundane concepts. And in Kali Yuga, people become so superficial that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to counteract that. Therefore, he crashed through these barriers. Many examples. In Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya was speaking to Mukunda Sarakar. Now, Mukunda Sarakar was a gopi that descended from Goloka Vrindavan. He was not an ordinary being. He was a great Vaishnav. You know his story. He was a medical physician, Ayurveda Kaviraj. And he was such a good physician that the Mughal king accepted him as doctor. He would get regular checkups. So one time the Mughal king was sitting on a very high platform on his throne. And he called Mukunda and was discussing his health with him. And it was the middle of the day, the sun was shining. So one of the servants of the king came with a peacock fan to shade him from the sun. And as soon as Mukunda saw the beautiful colors of the peacock feather, he remembered Krishna, Shamsundar, the lord of the gopis of Vrindavan, under the Kadamba trees on the bank of Yamuna. And he became so ecstatic, he just sighed and fell unconscious. And when he fell unconscious, he rolled right off the high platform, way, way, way down onto the ground. And the king saw this, and everybody else. They didn't know if he'd survive. They all ran down the steps from the platform and started fanning Mukunda. And the king said, "What happened? What happened?" And Mukunda came back to consciousness. And devotees are humble. Devotees will never try to show people that they're spiritually advanced. Whatever ecstasies are in their heart, those are meant for the pleasure of Krishna, not for the vision of the world. Part of chastity is is whatever spiritual opulences of ecstasies we have, we do not display them before the people of the world. We keep them very private as an offering to Krishna within our hearts. So the king asked Mukunda, what happened? What happened? And Mukunda said, I have a disease that is something like epilepsy, and sometimes this happens to me. But the king, just by his association with Mukunda, although he was a mogul, he understood. He saw the peacock feather and he went into ecstasy because he remembered Krishna. He said, Mukunda, you go home now and take some rest and report another time. So this is what a great personality he was. When he came to Jagannath Puri, he brought his young son, whose name is Raghunandan. And Lord Chaitanya asked a very mysterious question. He said to Mukunda, are you the father of Raghunanda or are you his son? Now, how would you answer that question? Mukunda Sarokar immediately answered with full conviction. He said, Raghunandan is my father and I am his son because of his spiritual elevation, because of his devotion to Krishna, I am learning from him how to love Krishna. Because Raghunandan was a very, very great devotee. Although he was a young boy, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so happy to hear this. He said, yes, this is correct. One who inspires us and gives us Krishna, he is our superior, he is our father. Now, Lord Chaitanya taught, and it has been the tradition in parampara, that we call every devotee Prabhu. Prabhu means master. Prabhupada explained, you shouldn't just say it, you should feel it. If you don't feel it, say it anyway, just as a matter of etiquette. But if you really want to make spiritual advancement, whatever we do should have substance. Nothing is superficial, nothing is artificial, nothing is external. Everything in bhakti should come from our heart. That's what bhakti is about. Every word should come from our heart. Every act should come from our heart. It should be meaningful. When we call every devotee Prabhu, that means I am servant. You are master. That is the etiquette. Respect. I was recently listening to a tape where Prabhupada was explaining the exalted mood of calling a woman Mataji. Mataji means mother. That means you're the subordinate son. He's explaining this is such a high offering of respect. So when we say Mataji, we should actually feel my mother, respectful. That is Vaishnav culture. How to respect every living being according to their particular position. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he extracted from the Vedas that the Yuga Dharma is the chanting of the holy name, and he made the Namacharya, Haridas Thakur, who was in a position that was absolutely condemned by the superficialities of society. He was born in a family of Malechas and Yavanas. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered him Namacharya, the Acharya of the holy names. And Advaita Prabhu, he shocked the whole Brahmin community because Advaita Prabhu is the leader of the Brahmins. And during the yearly Shraddha, which was very, very elegantly observed in those days amongst Brahmin families in Bengal, Advaita Prabhu called all the great Brahmins of the society to be a part of this. And the special feature of the ceremony was after the bhoga is offered to Lord Vishnu, the first remnants is given to the most exalted, senior most of all the Brahmins. And here are all these high-born Brahmins chanting their mantras. And Advaita Prabhu, in front of everyone, gives the highest honor to Haridas Thakur, who was an outcast, malecha, untouchable by external standards. And Haridas Thakur, why are you doing like this to me? I'm not worthy. I have no qualification to accept this. And Advaita Prabhu says, I am giving to you because by feeding you, I am feeding tens and millions of Brahmins. Aho bata swapachatogari yam yajjiva gre vartate namatubyam te pastapas te juhuvushashnuarya brahmanu chura namagranandi ete. Lord Kapila Dev declares, alas, one who is chanting the holy names of Krishna, even if he is chandala, lowest outcast, he can become the spiritual master of the whole world and deliver everyone if he's sincerely chanting the holy names of Krishna. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead reciting this verse, Kapila Dev. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sannyasi and Brahmin. And when he went to Vidyanagar, there's a beautiful place called Kavur on the banks of Godavari River. And he was inquiring from Ramananda Rai. Ramananda Rai was, by caste, a Shudra, and by ashram, he was a householder. So in traditional Vedic society of that time, how is this? Lord Chaitanya's Brahman, sannyasi, and he's seeking knowledge, sitting and hearing for days and days at a time from Ramananda Rai, who was a Sudra and a Grihastha. And yes, Ramananda Rai, he was ashamed to speak to him. How can you be inquiring from me? I am most fallen. Lord Chaitanya said, no, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya sent me to you because he knew that I was a very, very fallen soul and I required your association to understand who is Radha and Krishna. What is the goal of life? What is the essence of perfection? Kiba vipra kiba nyasi sudra kebinai jay Krishna tatva veta se guru hoy. It doesn't matter whether one is Brahman, Shudra, Grihastha, or Sannyasi. One who knows the science of Krishna, one who has the realization and knowledge of Krishna, can be guru. Many, many such examples. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the age of Lord Chaitanya's grandfather, Hare Krishna. Lord Chaitanya was only 24 years old. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the scholar of the whole world. Very senior, elderly man. Very pious, ethical. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the teacher of the king. He was a Raj Pandit, not an ordinary person. There were people that were coming thousands of miles to study under him. Even sannyasis, powerful men. And Lord Chaitanya, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya saw Lord Chaitanya in the Jagannath temple, unconscious, in ecstasy, he brought him home. And when he came to consciousness, Sarvabhauma told him that you're very young, only 24 years, and you're so beautiful in your bodily features. How will you ever maintain the vows of sannyas? It's very difficult. There's only one way. You have to understand very, very clearly the difference between matter and spirit. You must deeply comprehend the Vedanta Sutra. So I will teach you Vedanta Sutra. Now Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedaischa saraveraham eva vedyo vedanta krid vede vedeva chaham. He tells us in Bhagavad Gita, I am the compiler of Vedanta. I am the knower of Vedanta. All the Vedas, I am to be known. But because he was appearing like a young sannyasi, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, I must protect you. I will teach you. Out of etiquette, Lord Chaitanya said, yes, please teach me. Gopinathacharya, he couldn't tolerate this. He was the brother-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He was complaining. He actually had a big argument with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, I will help protect this Lord this Chaitanya. I will elevate him to a higher level, a higher sampradaya of sannyas, from Bharati to Saraswati. Gopinathacharya said, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He doesn't need you to elevate him. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, don't tell me all this. I know the scriptures. Where in the scriptures does it say that the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in the age of Kali like this? And there was a debate. And even though Gopinathacharya presented good evidence, Sarvabhauma and his students could not accept it. So Gopinathacharya said, you cannot understand the truth even though he's standing right before you because you have not even received a drop of his mercy. Your heart is just like a dry rice cake. There you go. So like that. And Lord Chaitanya told Gopinathacharya complained to Lord Chaitanya. He said, no, why are you complaining? He's senior to me. He's just like my father. He wants to protect me like a father to his son. I appreciate that. You should respect that also. That was Lord Chaitanya's mood. So he sat in Jagannath's temple day after day after day after day, very respectfully, attentively, listening to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya instruct him. And after all the teachings were complete, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked Lord Chaitanya, why you never asked any questions? You didn't say a word. I just spoke. I don't know if you understand or don't understand. Please say something. Oh, with your permission, I will speak. Yes, speak. Vedanta, you want to know what I have understood? Yes. Vedanta Sutra, written by Vyas, is like the sun. And your interpretation is like a dark cloud that completely covers all the rays of the sun. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was shocked. But because Lord Chaitanya said it with such respect, with such politeness, and such a service attitude, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya could bear it. Otherwise, he would not tolerate it. He said, well, what you're saying like this? If you have a better idea, you tell me. Oh, with your permission, I will tell. So then he told, and Sarvabhauma, and he explained Vedanta Sutra completely without touching any of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's misconceptions. And thus he defeated him in such a respectful way that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the only person who could do this is Krishna. So I believe you are Krishna. And he surrendered. And Lord Chaitanya revealed his sadbhuja, his beautiful six-arm form. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was like Lord Chaitanya's grandfather, surrendered to Lord Chaitanya. Surrendered to him totally. Accepted him not only as his spiritual master, but his very ultimate goal of life. So here again we find such loving respect and such etiquette, although not a common etiquette to a grandfather to accept someone like his grandson in age to be his guru. But this is a common theme. When Parikshit Maharaj was in the bank of the Ganga, Parikshit Maharaj was the emperor of the world. And assembled was Vedavyas, very senior person. Narada Muni, nobody knows what his age is. He was born just after Brahma, and he's still around. Very senior people. And it was Vishwamitra Muni and Vashishta Muni who've been around since the time of Ramchandra and before. And they're all accepting as their guru and teacher Shukadev Goswami, who was only 16 years old. He was the youngest amongst them. He was just a child. Why? Because he had heard so submissively and served his father Vedavyas and had realized the contents of the Bhagavat. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj surrendered to him and accepted him as his guru. So there are so many such examples in this way that we must look for the substance. The substance of our aspiration, of our goal in life, sadhya. And where we find Krishna, knowledge of Krishna, genuine devotion to Krishna, we honor, we worship, we surrender with the longing to receive it. In this beautiful chapter, such an incredible lesson on the subject of respect. We find here the demigods lost everything because they disrespected a senior person. The demons gained everything because they respected a senior person. The demigods are now going to their nephew and respecting him to regain their wealth. And they're actually going to get... They got the mercy of Vishwarup. But Vishwarup was... He was like an avadut in one sense. He just liked everybody. He didn't differentiate between who's who. He was the well-wisher of everyone. We're going to read in the future chapters, the future verses, the demigods ask him, perform a yajna so that we can gain strength and get our kingdom back. He said, yes, I will do. They wanted him to give up his life. They wanted to give him to give up his life through this yajna. And with his bones, they were going to make a weapon to kill the demons. Later on, this comes. Anyways, Vishwarup was quite an amazing person because he's doing this yajna for the demigods, but then the demons approached him and said, you know, put some oblations for us too. And he's one of those devotees that can't really refuse anybody. He's everyone's well-wisher. So he's doing the yajna from the demigods and he's also doing some mantras for the demons. The demigods heard that, and what did they do? Does anyone know? Huh? Jagannath, loudly. Louder, louder. They cut his head off. He's their guru. First they accept him as a guru, and then when he doesn't do exactly what they want him to do, they cut his head off. So what do you think happened to the demigods after that? Then they were really in big trouble. First they just ignored one guru, then they cut off the head of the other one. And this is the karma mishra mentality, where we have material desires mixed with our higher aspirations. Actually, demigods, it wasn't tadvidi pranipate na pariprasne na sevaya, upadek santite jnanam jnanina svatadarshana. That was not their spirit. They were not approaching submissively, eager to render service externally and superficially. They were willing to do that because they wanted some material benefits. but because they were materially oriented, not purely spiritually oriented. When the guru was satisfying their senses, they were worshiping him, they were respecting him, they were honoring him, they were showing love to him, they were obedient to him. But as soon as the guru did something that they didn't like, as soon as the guru was doing something that was not according to their expectations, their aspirations, their desires, they became angry at him. So much angry, he actually cut off his head. How do you ball? Unbelievable. Now, this may be very extreme, but in a more subtle level, we should all examine our own hearts. You know, what really is our service attitude? Srila Prabhupada would say, don't try to keep guru like you keep a flower vase in your house. Just, it's very decorative. It satisfies, he satisfies your senses, both personally and socially. That's what demigods were doing. As long as guru is fulfilling what I want, the way I want, then yes, I am surrendered and I will kijai glorify. But if the guru is not doing things the way I think things should be done, then unacceptable. That is not pariprashnena sevaya. Submissiveness means like Arjuna. Karapanyadoso pahata svabhava prichchamitvam dharma samuta cheha yachchayasyanishchitan bruhitan mesishyashtiham sarimam tvam papanam. Krishna, I don't know anything. Whatever you say is good. Please save me. I'm your disciple. That is the spirit. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that one really cannot approach a guru properly unless a person is really frustrated with materialistic pursuits in life. Unless a person really feels, I don't want material life anymore, it's a frustrating situation, I want out. That's the point where you can actually give your heart to guru. As long as we have our separate interests, as long as we have our own agenda, even Vishwaroop, he was allowing these peoples to do according to their own agenda. He wasn't forbidding. Yes, you want me to do this whole yajna for you? Vishwaroop was a Brahman realized person. Say, you want all this because you want your houses back? You want this because you want your position in society back? You want this because you want your wealth back? All right, I'll do it for you. And the demons, obviously, they don't want self-realization. They're asking him, please do this, offer something for us too, so that we could keep everything we have. All right, I'll do that. Arivo. So yes, he was tolerating. He was very tolerant. But what it is all about, this particular narration, is actually developing a very deep culture of what it really means to respect others. Tapo divyam putra gayena satvam. Human life is meant for tapasya. Tapasya means austerity. Austerity means to do what we don't like to do for a higher purpose. And respect is a very essential part of all of that. Just like when the Pandavas approached Bhishma, they touched his feet, they honored him, they worshipped him. Then they asked his permission, can we kill you? Please teach us how to kill you. Yes? But they did it out of love because it was Krishna's desire and Bhishma was very happy. This is the happiest day of my life. I will tell you everything. The culture of respect is so beautiful, so wonderful. And it actually makes our heart receptive for Krishna's mercy.
even the best seed, Jesus tells like this in Bible, even the best seed will not grow on a rock. Yes? And it has a real hard time growing on dry, barren land. But if land is very fertile, nicely plowed, then that seed will take root and flourish. So the seed of bhakti, if our heart is hard like rock, even the seed is good, it just lays there. If our heart is dry and hard due to false pride, pride makes the hard heart. I mean, makes the heart hard. And humility, submissiveness, makes the heart soft. Now, it doesn't matter how many times we've been cheated, doesn't matter how many times we've been hurt, the principle still remains the same. So if we really want to make some progress in life, we have to understand this. Yes, I may have been cheated. I may have been hurt. I may have put my faith in someone and they just crushed me and disappointed me, and I may have seen so much hypocrisy in my life and my heart has become so hard due to the process. Now, there are many things we can do in such a situation. We could just keep blaming others for our problems. I can't make any spiritual advancement because of that, and that person. Because of this, and this such situation and circumstance. Providence have been cruel to me. So we can think like that, and our heart remains hard, and the seed of bhakti just lays there, or somehow or other is struggling to go anywhere. We may be correct historically, literally, socially, philosophically, logically, but that doesn't make our heart any softer. What will make our heart soft? When we become humble, when we become forgiving, when we somehow or other stop blaming other people and really, you know, try to soften our heart through the process of being respectful and humble to others. You know, sometimes Krishna, Balaram's original spiritual master, he carries in one of his hands a plow. Now, if you want a field to grow properly, you have to plow it. Now, plowing is a very intensified exercise. The plow is just ripping through the ground. So the difficulties that come in our life, we could become hard-hearted by it if we take it in one situation, if we take it in one perspective. But then there's that beautiful golden verse that was quoted so much by Lord Chaitanya and all of our acharyas, and especially Srila Prabhupada. Tate nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipagam ridvag vapur vir vidadam namaste jivetya muktipade sadayabhak. That when miseries and sufferings and injustices come upon me, with folded hands I pray, Krishna, I deserve worse. I offer my obeisances to you. I am grateful. That person, the seed of bhakti, can actually make roots and grow into the flower and the fruit of love of God. So we can see that this is just a horrible situation that's come upon me. How can I possibly go on? Or we could see that somehow or other, my heart is being plowed. And if I just see it as the plow of the Lord, just making my heart more receptive, more softened, then we'll gain great benefit. There's the relative sense of what's right and wrong, and there's the absolute sense of what's right and wrong. From our particular level of consciousness, the absolute sense of what's right and wrong is what helps us to love Krishna. And the relative sense is what is literally correct.
We're more concerned with what helps us to love Krishna. Yes, may have been cheated. Just like Vishwaroop, we're going to be reading this, from a relative sense, he was offering an oblation to the demons. He chanted the name of a demon with an oblation, and the demigods, they didn't have such implicit faith in him, obviously. It wasn't yasya devi para bhakti relationship. They were spying on him. They were spying on their guru to make sure he was exactly what they wanted him to be. And one of their spies told him, he just did an oblation with a demon's name. Ha! Horrible. Actually, Vishwaroop was going to fulfill all their desires, but he was doing it his way, not their way, but they misinterpreted. Now, literally, it was true. From a literal point of view, he did say their name. But the spirit, if they just were respectful, if they were just grateful, they would have gained everything. But they were seeing things on a relative level, not in terms of what's actually best for their real self-interest. So in the age of Kali, it's the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. It's the age of the cheaters and the cheated. Everybody has millions of excuses. Some have billions of excuses of why to just be sarcastic and why to be negative and why to criticize and why to not respect anyone. Yes? We all have so many excuses, some more than others. And many of our excuses, most of our excuses, may be correct. But if they're bringing you down, what is the value? It's not helping us. It's not helping anyone else. We have to be humble. We have to be respectful. We have to be forgiving. We have to see goodness. We have to see the opportunity. And in that state, the heart is soft, softens, and the seed of bhakti can actually grow. Is there any questions? Yes, Mataji. Speak louder, I'm sorry. Some of them may have come to New Vrindavan to live, actually. She is asked, Rupa Rameshwari Devi Mataji is asking, would it have been better for the demigods to just accept their defeat from the demons and happily go to the forest? Yes? No, it wouldn't have been better. It would have been worse, because their service is to be demigods. It's their service to Krishna. It's the order of Krishna. It's the order of Brahma, their guru, that they should perform their duties. Indra has his duties in overseeing the rains in the Swargaloka region. Vayu has his duties. Agni has his duties. Surya has his duties. And they're doing their duties as a service to God. So no, when we have a service to God, it's not that as soon as things go wrong or something goes, we just go to the forest and give up. We fight. Fight for Krishna. That's Bhagavad Gita. But understand, the reason they lost is because they made an offense. They lost their service because they made an offense, and this is true. That's the worst reaction to an offense. We lose our service. And even worse than that is we lose our propensity to serve. We lose our taste for Krishna consciousness. If someone loses their taste for Krishna consciousness, it's generally due to offenses. It may be the offense of speaking ill or acting ill toward others, or it may be the offense, like the demigods, of neglect.
neglecting others, neglecting Krishna in his name by not chanting properly, neglecting the spiritual master, neglecting the Vaishnavas, even if you offend a common materialistic person, there will be a reaction. You're not supposed to offend anybody with neglect or evilness in your heart or envy. So the demigods made a big mistake and they lost their service. And they understood, Krishna's not pleased with this. We have to do our service. So they were doing, they did the wrong thing, but they were trying to atone by doing the right thing. By respecting a Brahman, they offended a Brahman, they lost, they want to respect a Brahman now, and so that they can again do their service to Krishna. Of course, they had many fringe benefits in their service. They had material enjoyment, they had beautiful ladies and men, and they had all kinds of wealth and all that, and fame and prestige. But still, it was their service. So to the degree they were doing it for Krishna's service, to that degree it was very right. To the degree it was for their sense gratification, it was not so right. But it was their service. Does that answer your question? You know, Prabhupada put Radharas Bihari in Juhu, in a swamp, and promised them, I'm going to build you a temple here. And then the land was taken away from him. And he fought. Oh, did he fight? He fought against the government. He fought against this very, very wealthy, influential man who gave the land and then took it away. It took years, and he didn't give up. And the devotees thought, it's impossible. How could we? We have nothing. We have no influence. How could we defeat this man who has, you know, the government officials in his pocket? Huh? How possible? Prabhupada said, no. This is Krishna's land. We already promised this to Krishna. We must fight. It took years. And after finally they got the land and they built Radharas Bihari Temple, Prabhupada smiled and said, it was a good fight. But nothing was for him. It was all for Krishna. Arjuna was told to fight, not go to the forest. But not fight for his own ego, not fight for his own aggrandizement, but fight as service for the welfare of humanity and the pleasure of the Lord. Yes, Mahaprabhu?
Yeah. Brahma is also Hindu, and he is representative of all Hindus. And he has clearly told all the Hindus in the beginning that now we should approach Vishnu. And he is connected with the demons, and he may be having some attraction for demons. You have to call it. Now, all the instructions were given. They have already committed mistakes in the beginning. Now, again, committing the same mistake, where you just mentioned that he was doing certain mantra for deliver thank you. Now, if we are coming in the parampara of Brahma, and if they, such respectable people, commit that type of mistakes, then in Kali Yuga, if we commit certain mistakes, why should we?
Because we're not in the parampara of the demons. And we're not in the parampara of the demigods either. We're in the parampara of the unconditional acharyas, who are pure in their devotional service. We're in the parampara of Narada Muni, Vedavyas, Madhvacharya, Madhavendra Puri. That is our parampara coming down from Brahma. This is not the parampara of demigods. It's the parampara of pure Vaishnava. Because Brahma is the original guru of our parampara. He may be the father
of the demigods. So many people are getting so much from Brahma, but we're taking the essence of pure devotional service that the greatest acharyas have received from Brahma. You don't see in our parampara demigods' names. You see pure Vaishnav acharyas' names. Of course, Madhvacharya is an avatar of Vayu, but he's a pure Vaishnava. So we follow in the footsteps of the acharyas, not the karma mishra demigods. Yes? So we should, just like for instance, even if they receive some knowledge, if there is a disciple of, it's like Advaitacharya. He's a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Now, Advaitacharya gave all of his six sons transcendental knowledge, but three of them became Mayavadis. So just because they got knowledge from him, and does that mean that we follow them? No. Chaitanya Charitamrita said they are asar, they are to be discarded, because they didn't follow. But Achyutananda, Krishna Mishra, we will follow because they're actually in the line of Advaitacharya. It's not just because of physical connection. Yes? If someone is a disciple of Prabhupada, but he's teaching something different and fallen from regulative principles and everything, we may respect them, and we respect all the demigods. But that's not our parampara. If they're not repeating properly, if we're following those who are actually Amala Bhaktas. As it is. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Anyways, here at New Vrindavan, Krishna's Radha Vrindavan Chandra has kept us from becoming a heavenly planet. No matter how hard we try, they keep things quite simple and some austerity. In the olden days, so many severe austerities, such simple life. For myself, from 1972 through 1979, I never once used a toilet. It's probably the best thing I did. No, you just dig a hole in the ground in some distant place. Simple living. You know, today, if people don't have nice facilities, how can I live here? How is it possible? It's very difficult. Somehow or other, Krishna just keeps things, you know, however we build things up, Krishna just tries to keep things simple. Because he doesn't want us to be demigods. He wants us to be simple-hearted devotees. Huh? Because Krishna knows what we need and what we and what will help us to actually take shelter. But it is very important, no matter what happens, we should never give up the opulence of humility and amanina manadena, offering all respect to others and expecting none in return. Kali Yuga is so easy, so many influences to become critical, to become negative, to become sarcastic and we all have so many reasons. But we have one reason not to, because it doesn't please Krishna and it's a great block to any spiritual progress.
We criticize others, and then we make no spiritual advancement, and then we do that just accelerates. I'm not making spiritual advancement because of that person, because of that person, because of that person. But factually, the only reason we don't make spiritual advancement is because of ourselves. Until we learn that, we have to respect, we have to honor, we have to learn to be humble. We have to see positive opportunities and be grateful and chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.